You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
Welcome. This is Bonnie Goldman, Editorial Director of The Body Pro. Right now, I'm in the poster session where researchers are standing in front of their posters. There's nothing like hearing the results of research directly from those who have actually conducted the research. It is these women and men who are transforming HIV treatment and care. In this podcast, the researchers will introduce themselves and then summarize their study. After their summary, I'll ask a few questions.
My name is Alexandra Oster. I work at the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I'm going to summarize the study that we did, which looked at prevalence of cervical cancer screening among HIV-infected women in the United States. Let me start with a little bit of background. HIV-infected women are at increased risk of cervical disease. Cervical cancer and cervical disease are caused by human papillomavirus, and HIV-infected women are more likely to be infected with human papillomavirus. They're more likely to have abnormalities in their cervix from that, and these things can all progress to invasive cervical cancer. And therefore, it's important that HIV-infected women get screened annually for cervical cancer. And actually, HIV treatment recommendations say that a woman who's diagnosed with HIV should get two pap smears in the first year after HIV diagnosis, and then one every year after that for as long as they live. So we did a study to look at whether women were getting pap smears as they're supposed to. We looked at HIV-infected women, and then we also wanted to understand what factors were associated with not getting screened for those women who said that they hadn't received a pap smear in the past year. So we looked at data from a project called the Supplement to HIV/AIDS Surveillance. Those data were collected during 2000 to 2004, and there were a little over 2,400 women in that project during that time. And we found that a quarter of women reported that they hadn't had a pap smear in the past year. In fact, that's probably an underestimate, because a lot of women think they've had a pap smear when they've had a pelvic exam for some other reason, or a lot of women may have thought that that pap smear was in the past year when actually it was longer ago than that. But nonetheless, we found that 23% did not report a pap test during that year before they were interviewed. And we found that there were three main things that made women more likely to have not had a pap smear. One of those was if they reported that their last pelvic exam was somewhere other than where they normally get HIV care. So for these women, they may be going to the gynecologist, or maybe they went to the emergency department for something and they had a pelvic exam at that time. And we found that they had an increased risk of not having had their pap smear. This could be for a couple of different reasons. When women go somewhere else for their pap smear, it requires additional coordination. They need to get a referral from their doctor sometimes. They need to actually make another appointment. They need to make it to that appointment. Maybe transportation is an issue. All of those things make it harder for women to get their pap smear than it would be if they got it at their normal HIV provider. A second factor that was associated with not having received a pap smear was increasing age. So we found that as women got older, they were less likely to have had a pap smear in the past year.
And when you say older, what do you mean? Is it that they reach menopause or?
Actually, we saw it all along the continuum. So women who were 30 to 39 years old were less likely to have had a pap smear than those who were 18 to 29. Those who were 40 to 49 were even less likely, and those who were 50 or older were even less likely. So we're not talking about women who are 65 or 70 or 75. We're talking about all along the spectrum. And it's very important that women of all ages get pap smears. You know, we think probably there are some reasons for that. As you get older, you have other health issues. Your physician is having to prioritize between different things, and women who are infected are having to prioritize between different things. But really, it is very important to continue getting that preventive health care screening. And then the last factor that was associated with not having received a pap smear was women who had a CD4 count less than 200. And so here, likely it's because these women are sicker, they have other issues going on, and it's just hard to prioritize.
Could you tell me a little bit about the characteristics of the people that were looked at? Tell me a little bit about their history of other STDs.
I can tell you that women who had reported that they had an STD in the past year were more likely to have received a pap smear. than women who reported that they didn't.
What are your guesses about that? Those women might be more sexually active and so more wanting to take care of themselves because they know that they put themselves at risk for other things?
Well, I think it may be a combination of factors. Certainly one from the physician's point of view is that many sexually transmitted diseases are diagnosed by doing a pelvic exam. And so while you're doing a pelvic exam, it's easy to do a pap smear at the same time. And so I think that may be something. Certainly, I think women who have sexually transmitted diseases, that raises the awareness of the need to be alert to other women's health issues.
In terms of looking at the United States, were there any places in the United States where women were less likely to get a pap smear? Was it more in southern rural areas or more in New York City?
We actually didn't look at regional differences. We didn't have a random sample from the entire United States. We actually had women from 18 different states, but it wasn't random, so we can't draw generalizations about different regions of the country.
Did you look at all about anal pap smears or just cervical pap smears?
We didn't, unfortunately, but that's an important area to continue doing research in. We came out with a few recommendations as a result of this study. I think there are two big areas where we can try to improve the rates of cervical cancer screening among HIV-infected women. One of those is through education, and one of those is through system change. So let me start with education. First of all, educating HIV care providers about the importance of providing annual pap smears to every HIV-infected woman, but especially those three groups that I mentioned that aren't getting their annual paps as well, which is those who are getting a pelvic exam elsewhere, those who are increasing in age, and those who have a CD4 less than 200. Second of all, I think educating primary care providers who may not do HIV care about and gynecologists about the differences in recommendations for those women who are infected with HIV. As I mentioned, they need to continue getting an annual pap smear every year forever. Whereas in uninfected women, they may be able to reduce the frequency of screening or stop at a certain age. So it's important that they understand the differences between those.
So isn't the recommendation for HIV negative women every 2 years now?
Actually, it's a little bit more complicated than that. For HIV negative women, they may be able to cut to every 3 years if they're low risk and they've had three negative PAPs in a row. But that is not the case for HIV infected women. And that's...
You didn't specify what is the exact increased risk. Is there a number? Is it on your poster, you say 13 to 60% of HIV infected women have cervical abnormalities. It's a very high percentage. It's not just like 10% higher or whatever.
No, it is far higher. And I don't have a number right offhand, but definitely 13 to 60% have abnormalities when they have their pap smear. Those abnormalities are more likely to persist. They're less likely to go away, and they're more likely to become more advanced than in women that don't have HIV.
I don't know if you follow this down the line, but if women don't get pap smears, then they could get cervical cancer. And are we seeing greater numbers of cervical cancer in HIV-infected women?
It's a little bit hard to say. Things have changed over the many years that we've been looking at the epidemic. But I would say that invasive cervical cancer is an AIDS-defining illness. And so it's one of those things that is in the criteria for it, the definition of AIDS. And the last recommendation in terms of education would be in educating HIV-infected women so that they know that it's very important to get that annual pap smear and that they can be on top of it as well, because everyone really needs to be in the loop and working towards this. So then the second thing that I mentioned was system change. And I mentioned that one of our findings was that women who are going elsewhere and getting pelvic exams are less likely to get their screening. And that may suggest that if you incorporate gynecologic care into the primary HIV care, that those things will run more smoothly and that women are more likely to get screened. And so at the system level, trying to integrate HIV and gynecologic care may help to improve cervical cancer screening.
Any next steps? Are you going to continue looking at this population?
I think, you know, the next step for this is to publish these results and try to get them out there so that HIV care providers, gynecologists, policymakers can all see the important issues that go into improving cervical cancer screening and act on that.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.